Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is a podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trial of trying for a baby. I'm Emma.
And I'm Gabby. And we've both been trying for a baby for a really long time, and neither of us is currently pregnant.
Everybody, welcome to episode 8.
It's
mental.
Yeah, it's mad.
It's mad that it's gone on this long.
How much longer is it going to go on for?
This is probably the longest commitment I've ever made.
I know. I feel very blessed.
Hashtag blessed.
Hashtag blessed. Not blessed in other places, obviously, hence why we're here.
This week... it's me doing an interview, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Who did you speak to, Emma?
So I spoke to the lovely Kate Davis from Your Fertility Journey.
Ah.
And we had a really nice chat, basically about PCOS.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
It was interesting. I didn't really know anything about PCOS, as I explain later.
Can we call it PCOS?
PCOS. It sounds like...
like a taco.
Yeah. Sounds like a Pokemon.
Oh, it does
Picos.
Sound like Picos.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Makes it sound so much cuter than it is.
It's funny because a few of my friends have gone through PCOS they've come out the other end. And I just thought it was like a bunch of, as I will say later, I thought it was just a bunch of cysts on your ovaries and there's not really much you can do to help it. But it sounds like there's loads you can do.
Oh, right. Great. Yeah. Well, yeah. Look forward to hearing about that.
I mean, none of it's like a miracle cure, but it's certainly stuff that you can, you know, do to kind of help to regulate your cycles and stuff. So that was cool.
Cool.
And you spoke to Professor Tim.
I did. I was talking to Professor Tim about sperm.
Ooh.
Everyone's favourite.
Yeah.
Spermy sperm sperm. specifically, I asked him about morphology because I think it's one of the test areas that they say is hard to change.
Uh-huh.
It's also... our diagnosis, so yeah. I was a bit selfish there, but hey, I'm allowed.
Mate, it's
I'm the
your
co-host
podcast.
Of this podcast. Yeah. I can do what I want.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Great. Only remains for us to say, if you're listening to this podcast via Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the podcast.
Yes, please.
How many times can I say the word podcast?
Podcast.
Yes. Because sometimes I read through those reviews and it makes me happy.
Oh, there are some really lovely ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And B, it helps other people to find the podcast.
Which is good.
And if you listen on something else and you can rate and review it, can you do that too?
Do that as well.
I don't know what it is, but...
we're not fussy.
Yeah. And sorry about the noise right now. That's my cat scratching up the carpet.
Nora.
Stop it. Otherwise, please follow us on Instagram.
At Big Fat Negative.
And Twitter.
At Big Fat Negative.
And Facebook.
Big Fat Negative.
And please send us an email and tell us your whole story. Like, we're so interested and we love getting those emails.
Yeah.
We've
had some really good ones.
We've had some really great ones and we've like entered into dialogue with quite a lot of people.
Can we actually do a special shout out to Michelle, who got in touch with us all the way from Adelaide.
Adelaide?
Or Radelaide, as I used to call it when I was travelling there.
Did you?
Yeah. Oh, I was one of them.
Definitely one of our most distant listeners.
Yes.
Although I have been in touch with some other Australian listeners.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Hi, guys.
Okay, so in that case, prove us wrong. Yeah. If you're further away, get in touch and tell us.
Oh, and the other thing I wanted to ask, guys, how would you feel about doing some kind of meetup, Australian crew welcome to?
Oh, wow.
Maybe sometime around Christmas, in which we refrain from talking about trying to have babies and just get drunk together and maybe cry?
Oh my God, it sounds fantastic.
Does that sound good?
Sounds like every night out. Yeah.
Anyway, give us a shout if you'd be up for that, because I'm thinking about organising something. I found a really good room in a pub that was just crying out for a lot of women who can't have babies.
For a big fat negative meetup?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Can we make decorations as well?
Oh my, can we just do like, you know, those strings of like children holding hands, paper children. Can
we just do ovaries?
Like, well, just, I was going to say vaginas and penises.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah?
I love it. Okay, already, great. I love it.
Cool, guys.
Right, guys, get in touch and let us know what you think.
Let us know. See you later.
See you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Emma, how are you?
Well, I've had a good week, I would say. Like,
oh my Lord.
I've had a legit good week.
Hold the front page.
I know. Or a good couple of weeks, actually, because it's been a while since we met, So I threw a party and had a parade with acrobats because I ovulated vaguely on time.
Oh my Lord.
I know.
Hello, congratulations, mate.
I felt like celebrating a lot.
What did you do, in truth?
I just felt really happy and posted something on Instagram stories.
Good, good. That's the way to do it, isn't it?
Yeah. So I ovulated on day 18. What could have been day 18? So basically, here's the deal. My period, kind of after I came off the meds, wasn't really a period. It was like kind of light spotting coupled with something kind of gross. So I'm not going to go into that much detail, but it was kind of gross and weird. I've spoken to two practitioners about it. One was my acupuncturist, and she said, it sounds like that was your crap lining falling away. It was your period. It was just a really shit one.
Right.
One was the anonymous nurse at my clinic who replied to my email within 5 working days. Barely.
Oh, very good of her.
Uh-huh. And she said she didn't think it was my period, but if it was, then I ovulated on day 18. So I'm going to go with, yeah, it was. Otherwise, I'm on day 50-something of my cycle, which not even I get to those heady heights that often.
Wow. I mean, that's something pretty special right there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So you've ovulated?
Yeah. Yeah. Ask me how.
How?
Okay, so I am not an exercise enthusiast by any stretch of the imagination, but when I started trying for a baby, or when I went off the pill, I didn't have a period for like 3 months, and I was having a freak out to one of my friends who has PCOS, and she said to me, when her period was going nuts, she did some running and it tended to sort it out.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting.
Yeah. So I took up running, which was like the hardest thing I've ever done. I'm just not an exercise person.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it a lot.
I complained a lot. I still complain a lot. But yeah, over the summer, I kind of stopped because it was too hot, essentially.
It was too hot.
It was so hot. And then I just fell out of... I was like going for maybe one run every couple of weeks, but not really. And it's not like I exercise really hard. Like, I run about 2 miles, so it's about half an hour. Because I'm quite slow. But I'm trying to do it 3 times a week.
Right.
And I'm ovulating vaguely on time.
Oh my Lord, could that be it?
I don't know, but yeah. Basically, so I'm sitting here, I'm wearing my sports kit.
Yeah, you are. You look great.
Thanks, mate. And so that's really exciting. And then the other thing that happened this week, which is relevant to this podcast, is I edited last week's podcast.
Right.
Confusingly.
Yes.
But it was Gordon Mullins, and you'll all have heard it by now. And if you haven't heard it by now, it's super interesting. He's a super interesting guy. And he started talking about people's periods and like what is a normal period and do you have spotting, do you have like, he started talking about black blood, which scared me.
I know, yeah.
The devil is in that person.
It got a bit murky, didn't it? Literally. It did.
Yeah, I quite liked how openly he talked about it.
I know,
in this sector, like, we don't talk about it that much. But then I just got angry because no one at my clinic has ever asked me what my periods are like.
Yeah, other than kind of what the length is, yeah. Right?
And are they regular?
Yeah.
And nobody has ever asked me about consistency. Nobody has ever asked me about spotting. If I ever raise spotting, I literally get dismissed most of the time. They're like, oh, it's fine.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, you're preaching to the converted here because that's what I've had as well.
It's just, and I'm just like, why is nobody at my clinic asking me this stuff? It's obviously relevant.
Mm.
Like, why are they're basically looking at the uterus like it's some kind of, like, separated from the rest of the body.
Mm.
And it's just, it drives me insane. Like, we could be saving the NHS millions of pounds, surely.
Yeah, if we joined a few dots.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if they started looking at, you know, what is your cycle like? What are your hormone levels like? I have to complain a lot for them to look at my bloods.
Mm. I mean, I've had a kind of similar revelation over the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, it's a bit mad.
Yeah, it is.
I'll talk about mine in a minute.
Yeah, well, please do, because I was going to say, mate, above all, the last couple of weeks, I've missed your face.
Oh, did you not see it plastered all over Instagram?
I did.
Beaming.
If anybody wants to feel really jealous, look at Gabby's Instagram feed. It is impressive.
Yeah, I had a really nice holiday.
Did you?
Yeah.
Remind us where you were.
I was in Greece. We were in Athens and Spetses and Hydra, and it was just dreamy. It was so good. I really needed a break, I think.
Yeah.
And I did manage to switch off. I didn't think about work.
Well done.
Read 3 books. Chilled. The food is so good in Greece. Like, I didn't realise. Like, my husband and I are kind of 90% pescatarian.
Yeah.
Except generally when we go on holiday, because it's really hard to eat kind of without meat when you're in somewhere like Spain or Japan or...
Yeah.
It was so easy. Like, the food was so good.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't eat any meat and it was...
Mate.
Yeah.
Healthy and great. And you haven't even put on any weight. In fact, I would say you're skinnier.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely not true. I mean, I ate loads of salads, but I also discovered delicious cheese pies, which I ate all of, so...
Did you have Saganaki?
Yes.
Oh.
And yeah, there's a kind of a version of it that's just cheese. It's just pure cheese.
So great.
Oh my God. We also discovered orange pie, which is like phyllo pastry with orange syrup soaked. And it's, oh my God.
Ye gads.
Yeah, no weight was lost. The 2 or 3 lengths I did of a pool did not negate the amount of syrup I consumed.
And did you have any reflections on your state of fertility?
Well, I had a couple of revelations actually. I mean, other than the one that told me I want to move to Hydra and own some chickens and write novellas in the sun.
You should do that.
That's what I want
to
do.
But don't do it until I get to do it too.
Okay, fine.
Because then what will happen to Bert and Ernie, our twins?
That's true. Yeah. It's true.
Mm-hmm.
Bert and Ernie. Well, yeah, for a start. So we chose Greece in the first place because...
Hot and cheap,
exactly, just like you. Well, we were thinking it was a toss-up between California and Greece.
Okay.
And at the time when we decided, I still thought for some reason that I might be pregnant. So I was like, well, if I am preggers at that point, it's probably better to go to Greece because it's like closer to home.
True.
You know?
Practical.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that didn't matter a jot because... That was just not happening. So we found ourselves in Greece, but then it was relevant for another reason because when we first started talking about doing IVF, we were like finding ways to kind of think about it that would make it feel like more of an adventure. And like, we were like talking up all the positives. And we were saying that if we do a round on the NHS and it doesn't work, which, you know, there's a very strong chance that that would happen.
Yeah.
That we would maybe do our second round in Greece.
And
Lovely. We were like... We just, you know, turn it into a bit of an adventure and maybe move out there for 6 months or something.
Oh, that
like,
would be
proper nice.
That would be an utter delight.
I know, right?
Yeah.
And I know there's loads of people, I mean, there's a few people on Instagram that are doing that as well at the moment. So there's loads of people to go to for advice.
Absolutely.
So there, so we were in Greece and I was thinking about that and it was really nice. I was pleased to say that I was enjoying my time in both Athens and the islands. I was like, I could do this.
Yeah.
Definitely. Not least because the Athens is like 2 hours from Hydra by ferry, which is totally doable.
Yeah, absolutely. That's almost like my prospective commute when I moved to my house in Margate, which is never going to happen.
So I'll just move to Hydra for 6 months and do IVF and have chickens. So, oh, yeah.
Can I come?
But that's not even the revelations, actually.
Okay, so, hit me.
Firstly, while we were there, the whole male infertility story broke across all of the press. It was mad. It was covered everywhere. And it was, I think, due to, I mean, there was a new study that found that male fertility is dropping. So male fertility is going through the floor, which we've kind of spoken about before.
Yeah. Children of men.
Exactly, children of men.
Or not children of men.
Not the first episode, if anyone hasn't listened to it. And yeah, there was one woman that was quoted that particularly spoke to me, and it was a woman called Sheena Lewis, who is an expert in reproductive medicine at Queen's University Belfast.
Oh.
And she said, basically, she was saying that men are not being diagnosed and looked after properly.
Oh.
And she was saying that, you know, the woman actually, this is a quote from one of the many news sources that it was covered in. She said, the woman actually acts as the therapy for the man's problem. We are giving an invasive procedure to a person who doesn't need it in order to treat another person. And that doesn't happen in any other branch of medicine.
That is true.
It's mad.
It's bizarre.
And that's exactly what's going on with us. Because, well, at the moment, my husband, we have a male factor diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been pushed towards IVF. And I was just like, maybe that's not the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Maybe we should be seeing a urologist first. Or, yeah, you know, maybe we'll still end up doing IVF, but at least speak to someone first.
Yeah. And isn't it weird that when a man has a problem with his fertility, he has to go and see somebody whose specialism is weeing?
That does feel weird, doesn't it? Yeah.
Like, literally, urologist, somebody who works with urine.
Is that? Yeah. I mean, what the hell?
It just, no, you know, because I was reading this as well while you were away, and there were loads of people saying, like, why do men have to go and, like, there's basically no male fertility specialism in Western medicine.
It's just a balls and penis doctor.
Yeah, but it's like mainly penis. It's a penis doctor, not a
balls
doctor.
Why not a sperm doctor?
Yeah.
There should be a sperm doctor.
There should be a sperm doctor. If there's any sperm doctors out there...
Please get in touch.
Yeah, get in touch. We'll have you on the show. We'd love to talk to you about balls.
Well, but luckily, we are speaking to a urologist in a couple of weeks, aren't we?
Yes.
So we can put loads of these questions to him. And he was actually quoted in some of the articles I was reading, and he was just saying that there aren't very many of them, of his kind, of these balls and penis doctors.
Balls.
There's not enough of them.
Cock and balls.
So yeah, that was my first of two revelations.
Okay. That's a great revelation.
Yeah, though. It was good. I was really interested in it. It was a positive one. The second one was not as much fun, I have to say.
Oh.
basically. Well, I was this cycle I was testing ovulation quite determinedly, and
well,
I got a positive result.
Yes.
And I charted it in my app.
Well done, mate.
Thank you. And basically, it was a bit later than had been predicted previously by the app.
Okay.
And so it moved when my period was kind of due, supposedly, to a bit later in the month. So I was like, oh, it's not going to come during my holiday. Brilliant. I won't take any tampons with me. And then, basically, so it hit early and unexpectedly, which was not only inconvenient, but obviously A, upsetting, and B, a bit confusing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so naturally, I dived straight to Dr. Google and did some self-diagnosis.
So wait, how early was it?
It was, okay, so it was 8 days after my ovulation.
And
I was like, that doesn't seem right. So I started Googling, and it's called luteal phase defect.
Yes.
And I've now since watched a YouTube video as well, which makes me an expert.
God, you're such a researcher.
I know. I went down the wormhole, the luteal wormhole. And so a luteal phase is supposed to be at least 12 days long, and mine was only 8. And so it is classified as luteal phase defect.
I will share something with you.
Please do.
I'm on day 22 of my cycle.
Right.
Indeed, that was a period. And I've just started spotting.
Oh, interesting.
And I can't decide whether that's I had sex 3 days ago spotting, and I'm really sorry to any family who's listening, or I have a short luteal phase spotting, because my the clinic has said that I have a short luteal phase.
Right, so the clinic has found that out.
Yeah, so that, well, because I go in and I go, oh, my period started 3 days after my ovulation. But it's like, as I understand it, it's not that hard to solve, because you take progesterone. It's just basically not enough progesterone in your system.
Well, that's it. And to be honest, it all fits in with the spotting that I was having earlier. Mm-hmm. So it all makes sense. It's like, okay, maybe this is one of the problems. So that means we now have... It kind of completely negates what I just said about the male factor diagnosis, and that perhaps actually I have some of my own issues.
Well, who is it that I was talking to? Oh, it was when I went to see the nutritionist. One of the things she said was, quite often you'll find that couples both have something wrong with them. Mm. And she's like, if the man had if the man had crap sperm and the woman was perfect, then probably they still would get pregnant. Oh. Or if the woman had like something wrong with her, but the man had like amazing turbo sperm.
Yeah.
Then again, same thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true, but you know, I'm not saying that there's something wrong with you.
No, well, I think we've found that there is.
But, you know, it's just, why hasn't your clinic asked you to make a chart of this stuff?
Is it? Like, I think I meant to do it today, actually. I meant to email the clinic and just tell them about my discovery.
Yeah.
I've diagnosed myself, but at least let them know, right?
They're not going to bloody diagnose you,
are they?
Well,
yeah, and they might ask me to go in for another blood test. Who knows?
I don't understand why the minute you're referred to a fertility clinic, they go, right, we want you to make a chart of when you ovulate. Like, you can get an app. It's not hard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We want you to measure your ovulation, measure your temperature, and like let us know when your period starts and also what your cervical mucus is like. Like, people who are infertile will do anything.
Yeah, it's true.
It's not like, it's not a huge hardship. It doesn't even take that long.
Well, doing it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Just sharing it with the clinic might help to join the dots a bit sooner than I'm doing myself.
Yeah,
by absolutely. Being pissed off because I had to buy tampons in Spetsies, which I wasn't expecting.
Tampons in Spetsies. What's Greek for tampon?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't get that far. I just went the international symbol of tampon.
What, just like... I'm making a... I'm making a motion.
She's doing a finger up.
No.
Well, luckily I found them on the shelf and it didn't come to that. So we're all right. But yeah, so there we go. So it was a holiday, but there was also some self-discovery.
It was an emotional roller coaster.
It was. Oh, well, actually, no. I mean, I didn't let it affect me too much.
Good.
Like, the day that I went and bought tampons and Spetsies, I also went to a really brilliant beach that was only accessible by boat and had a lovely day, so it didn't affect me, honestly. I got over it pretty quickly.
I'm going to end this here, because otherwise I'm just going to go really jealous.
Sorry.
I won't be able to speak to you.
I know, we never have to talk about it again.
Cool. So I did this interview with Kate Davis of Your Fertility Journey a couple of weeks ago, and we had a really nice, really long chat about PCOS, which, to be honest, I didn't know an awful lot about. A couple of my friends have it. I know, you know, I kind of knew that you had erratic periods, and that's pretty much all I knew. So it was really nice to learn a lot. Just one little warning, which is that we did the interview over Skype, and for that reason the sound is a little bit in and out, and at one point one of us gets two emails, which is very exciting for both of us, I think. But I think the interview itself more than makes up for it, because it was an absolutely fascinating chat. So please enjoy. Kate, you know, I guess my first question would be, what do you do? Who are you? What's your job?
Okay, well, I'm an independent fertility nurse consultant, mm-hmm. and as far as I'm aware, I'm currently the only independent fertility nurse consultant in the UK. My background is I work for over 20 years in the NHS, working in women's health, of fertility. And loved what I did, loved working in the NHS, but felt that there was a real gap for women who were trying to conceive. And particularly for me, and I guess my interest lay very much in the natural fertility side. And by that I mean that when a woman decides that she wants to get pregnant yesterday, never mind in 6 months, 8 months, 2 years, whatever. Mm-hmm. And often there doesn't seem to be a great deal of information advice for women on how they can optimize their ability to conceive in the early stages. And I think there is very much a push within the NHS to invasive investigations and
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Treatments, so IVF, and that push is very much there, and I think probably many women have felt as though they are being pushed a little bit down that road.
Absolutely.
Whether or not they want to.
Yeah.
But actually, natural fertility awareness and natural fertility advice and information reduces time to conception dramatically. But we're just not giving that within the NHS. You know, it's nobody's fault, but often there's not time to give that. So, you know, nurses, like myself working in the NHS back then, or doctors, don't have the time to give this information to women. Mm-hmm. So you're told to go away and keep trying, but you're not told anything else. Cool. So that's kind of the gap that I identified. And so, had to set up in private practice, because there's kind of no commissioning with the NHS for this type of service. So set up in private practice about 5 years ago, and absolutely love what I do. And I consult women using online video. I also do a bit of time in Harley Street as well. I have a particular passion for PCOS, so polycystic ovarian syndrome, mainly because it's on the increase. You know, 1 in 10 women will have PCOS, but actually, anecdotally, we see that increasing. So I'm really passionate about it, and I could shout from the rooftops about PCOS and how women can control their PCOS.
Why is it increasing?
Well, it's an interesting question. I think our lifestyle is nowhere near as good as it used to be. We are very much more of an obese nation than we ever used to be. And it's a little bit of a chicken and egg situation with regards to PCOS. You know, do women have PCOS and then develop obesity, or do they become overweight and then as a consequence develop PCOS? So there's a little bit of chicken and egg. It could be both. But certainly, because of our lifestyle, our less healthy lifestyle, the fact that we're eating a lot more carbohydrate, a lot more sugar, we're having more of an instance of PCOS than we've ever had before. And that is only going to get worse.
Wow. Okay, so let's kind of backtrack a little bit. PCOS is polycystic ovary syndrome. What actually does that mean?
Okay. Well, it's quite a complex condition. And unfortunately, it's one that's not easily diagnosed. So it can take women years to get a definitive diagnosis.
Great.
Basically, it's a hormonal condition that affects various different parts of the body. So some women, and not all, will have cysts on their ovaries, which will make ovulation quite difficult. Mm-hmm. But they also have a hormonal condition. So they have raised androgen levels, so raised testosterone, which then creates lots and lots of different symptoms in their body. So traditionally, a woman with PCOS will have excess bodily hair, will have thinning of hair on the scalp, may have some acne, may be slightly overweight. So those are the kind of symptoms, but also the raised androgen levels then cause more problems, and all the other hormones that are just really not working particularly correctly because of the condition, you end up with raised insulin levels. And those raised insulin levels can often create the obesity side of it, but they also imbalance all the other hormones as well. So it's like a vicious circle, really. So your testosterone becomes more imbalanced because of your insulin resistance. So it's really complex. And like I said, unfortunately, it's quite difficult to diagnose. And you diagnose it using the Rotterdam criteria. But it's unfortunately, even that's not standardized within the UK. So a lot of women can go, like I said, for many years without being diagnosed. And this is devastating because often there'll be young women who have taken the pill, absolutely no problem at all. They're not, maybe not getting periods, or they're getting regular periods on their pill. They stop the pill. The pill has masked their condition. They stop the pill because they want to get pregnant, and suddenly they can't because they have no cycle.
So we had Alice Rose on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, by the time this goes out, and she said, I might have PCOS. And that really confused me because I just assumed that if you have PCOS, you have cysts on your ovaries.
Yeah, no, not always, not at all. And in fact, many women can have elements of PCOS, but actually generally they might work quite well, they might control their PCOS quite well. And mm-hmm. I think that's why I'm passionate about PCOS, and we'll talk about that in a bit, is just there's so much can be done to control it. So women can have elements of PCOS, and if they're, you know, reasonably good with their lifestyle, that actually their PCOS might not be causing them too much of a problem. But then if they were to, you know, start drinking lots of alcohol and eating poorly, eating lots of sugar and carbohydrates, then, you know, their PCOS can become worse, and they can then develop cysts on their ovaries, whereas previously they might not necessarily have them.
So I put something on our Instagram stories just to say, if anybody's got any questions about PCOS, give us a shout. We got absolutely bombarded with questions. Yeah, like loads of people who just don't, you know, as you say, it's a condition that I don't think people properly understand. So, you know, one of the people said, can you see it on an ultrasound? How do you diagnose it? Is it more than just, you know, a date with wonder?
Okay. Yeah. So like I mentioned, the Rotterdam criteria is a diagnostic tool which ideally should be used to assess PCOS. And they have three criteria. So one is that you have cysts seen on the ovaries. One is that you have raised androgen levels, so the testosterone. And the other one is that you have either irregular or non-existent periods, and that is showing either irregular or no ovulation. And to be diagnosed with PCOS, you have to have two of those three. Okay. So if the lady that asked that question, if she's not been properly diagnosed, then I would suggest that she goes and sees her GP and asks to be assessed based on the Rotterdam criteria.
And what is androgens?
That's testosterone. Okay. Testosterone is one of your androgens, and that's your raised androgens of your testosterone.
Okay, because we've got one person who said she's 35 years old, she has high AMH. Is that a symptom of PCOS?
Well, interestingly, many women with PCOS will have raised AMH levels. Now, it's not currently used as a diagnostic tool for PCOS, but it could be potentially used as a diagnostic tool in the future.
Okay.
Because many women will have really high, like in the 50s, 100s, AMH levels, whereas, you know, normally it wouldn't be that high. So that definitely does seem to be, you know, definitely seems to kind of coincide with PCOS. And I think that's because when you're born as a woman, or as baby, as females, we're born with all the eggs we'll ever have.
Yeah.
Right from birth. And so a woman with PCOS probably isn't getting rid of those eggs on a monthly basis like a woman who doesn't have PCOS. So they tend to have a higher ovarian reserve, which in a really positive way means that women with PCOS can probably go on conceiving a little bit longer than a woman without PCOS.
Interesting, if they can conceive.
Yeah, behind every cloud is a bit of a silver lining.
God, I wish my silver lining would bloody come out. So, I mean, we talked about cycles there a little bit. I got two questions that were quite similar. If you have regular cycles, could you still have PCOS? And I guess your answer is yes.
Yes, absolutely.
But do irregular cycles mean you have it?
No, not necessarily, because irregular cycles can mean, you know, various other hormonal problems. And there are a number of things, or it could be thyroid problems. There could be lots of different reasons. But PCOS tends to be the most common reason why women will have regular periods. But we're talking about potentially could be quite irregular. So over 35 days, I see some that are, you know, might have only two periods a year, so you could be looking at 60 day, 70, 80, 90 day cycles. But anything over 35 days is kind of out of the normal ranges and would be worth just finding out why.
So what does PCOS in practice mean for fertility?
It doesn't mean, and I think this is really important to get across, it doesn't mean if you have a diagnosis of PCOS, it doesn't mean that you aren't going to conceive at some point. You know, that is not a categorically saying that's it, that it's over for you. That's not what PCOS is. PCOS will definitely make it harder. So if you consider that on average a woman would ovulate 12 times a year, if you've got PCOS and you're having longer cycles, then you're not going to be ovulating as regularly, and therefore in a 12 month period your chances are reduced. Add to that the fact that you've got cysts surrounding your ovaries, which will make it more difficult to ovulate, and also add to that the hormone imbalance that is associated with PCOS, then that can make it more difficult. But it certainly doesn't mean that it's not possible. A woman in that situation may need something like Clomid, an ovulation induction, to help with ovulation, and various other treatments that can help with PCOS to help her conceive.
And what are those treatments that doctors give you? So you mentioned Clomid there.
Clomid, yeah. So Clomid is ovulation induction. There are other methods of ovulation induction. The most common treatment for PCOS at the moment is metformin. Metformin is actually traditionally a diabetic drug, actually, but it's used to work on insulin resistance, as it would with diabetes, and it helps regulate the insulin levels and regulate all of those hormones back to where we kind of would want them to be. Unfortunately, what we're finding is that metformin isn't as helpful in women with PCOS and helping them lose weight, because if you're overweight, then you run the risk of difficulty in conceiving. You also run the risk of increased miscarriage, problems during pregnancy, problems at labor, and problems after the baby is born for both you and the baby as well. So it's really important for a woman who has PCOS and who is overweight to get her weight down and get her BMI below 30, ideally, to reduce those risks.
We've talked a little bit about what doctors can do about PCOS. What can sufferers themselves do about it?
Okay, so there's loads that a woman can do to help control her PCOS. In actual fact, there's been new guidelines that have come out, international guidelines on the treatment of PCOS that came out a couple of months ago. And these are international guidelines. And then they're saying as well that the number one factor for controlling PCOS, you know, forget medication, forget everything else, obviously you still need to take it if you're prescribed it, but the number one first line treatment is lifestyle changes. Okay. And that's what I'm really passionate about helping women with. So diet is number one. So every time a woman with PCOS eats refined carbohydrates, sugars, her insulin levels go crazy, hit the roof. And that imbalances all the hormones. So having a really low carb, low sugar diet is absolutely crucial. Same, you know, with alcohol, limiting alcohol because it's so sugary. So that's going to have an effect. Exercising, working on self-esteem, taking the right supplements. Supplements are really key.
And what supplements?
The normal supplements that any woman who's trying to conceive should take is folic acid. This is recommended by the Department of Health, along with vitamin D. some women choose to take folate, but there's not the research to back that as far as the medical profession is concerned at the moment, but it may be in the future. Okay. And then I always advise a really good omega-3. Omega-3 is really important for egg quality, okay. particularly on the PCOS. It has a really good effect. And the main one that I have seen fantastic effects with, and there's more and more research that's going into this, is a supplement called inositol, works on insulin resistance. So it is a little bit like the medical metformin treatment, but it works on insulin resistance, and it kind of brings down back the insulin levels and the hormones. It also improves egg quality. It also improves the symptoms of PCOS, so acne, weight gain, excess bodily hair, etc. It helps with mood. It helps promote good sleep. It's amazing, and it's getting more and more recognition. Anecdotally, with my patients, I see amazing effects. I see that their cycles that were lengthy start to come back down to normal length, and it really does work.
Inositol. And where is that available?
Then, unfortunately, not all inositols are created equal. So some are not very good quality. The cheaper brands tend not to be so good quality, but some are really good. There's two that I particularly like. One is Inofolic, and the other one is Ofistol. And those are the two products that I've seen, particularly Inofolic, that I've seen work really well.
Okay. Going to get on Amazon right now. We've talked a bit about weight and the effects that that has on pregnancy, but can PCOS cause problems during pregnancy, or is it just trying to get pregnant?
So it can increase your risk of miscarriage, unfortunately. So once you conceive, if you have PCOS, you have got a greater risk of miscarriage, and it can cause problems in pregnancy, particularly gestational diabetes. Okay. So meaning when they're pregnant can develop gestational diabetes. So it's like diabetes, but it's normally for the time of gestation, so during the pregnancy. And then clearly PCOS can cause problems if a woman is overweight when she gives birth as well, and after pregnancy.
Okay. Bringing up weight again, one person said that every expert she reads about or sees tells people to lose weight, but she says she's got PCOS and she doesn't need to lose weight. So what do you do then?
Yeah, so lean PCOS, as it's often called, is it's more tricky, because I find that women who have got PCOS who do carry a little excess weight, once they start to lose the weight, the health benefits are huge. Their cycle starts to come back to normal. They start to ovulate, all these wonderful things. But with lean PCOS, that's not necessarily the case, and it is more difficult to treat. I think it's always important to make sure that, even if they've got lean PCOS, that they still have a very healthy diet, that they still keep those carbohydrates and sugars low, because there still can be insulin resistance there, even with lean PCOS, and that they have a very healthy lifestyle to compensate for that. But it is more tricky to get on top of.
I mean, what about those of us who don't have PCOS? So I've got completely mad cycles. Is there anything that we can do? Is there anything that you're talking about that, applies to people who perhaps find that they've got random spotting sometimes? Or, I was speaking to Gabby and she's worried that she's got a shortened luteal phase, which I've had a few times.
Yeah. I mean, a kind of luteal phase defect and the shortened luteal phase and spotting is an area that I find quite interesting, actually, because to me, my personal opinion is progesterone is the most important hormone. Now, somebody else might say, I disagree with that. But I think progesterone, in my opinion, is the most important hormone. And that's because that hormone is responsible for creating that lovely endometrium, that beautiful duvet that covers, the egg's going to nestle into and keep it nice and warm. And if you've not got good progesterone levels, then you're not going to be able to support an implant in pregnancy. So that's why progesterone is really key for me. So therefore, in answer to your question, supporting the luteal phase is probably one of the areas that in a cycle you can try and do something about. And there are various ways that you can do that. So acupuncture is the only complementary therapy that is research-based to help with fertility. And I have seen good effects with that, definitely, increasing a luteal phase and promoting that good progesterone levels. Other things, like some women choose to take Vitex to help as a natural progesterone.
What's Vitex?
What's Vitex? So Agnus castus, you might have heard of it being called Agnus castus or Vitex. That's it's a very, very potent herb. And because it's so potent, it actually worries me a little bit because it can have a negative effect on fertility. So it's not something that I necessarily advise. And certainly if anyone was considering it, I would advise them to talk to a herbalist or a naturopath and definitely their doctor as well before they even start dabbling in the herb, because it is very potent. But some women do use it and have seen benefits with it. The third treatment, which is more medicalized, is progesterone therapy in the luteal phase. So progesterone pessaries to increase progesterone levels.
I've had those before.
Yeah. So that is definitely the kind of medical way of treating it, which is definitely successful, definitely more success in creating a better luteal phase. Wow. Not readily prescribed. Unfortunately, it is quite difficult sometimes to get it, particularly on the NHS. Privately, you're much more successful.
Okay, and I would say the pants effects on that. It's not a side effect. It's a pants effect. It's really gross.
Yeah,
really, really gross.
Yeah, absolutely.
One question I actually forgot to ask was: does PCOS have an effect on a failed IVF cycle?
I suppose with regards to PCOS and egg quality, perhaps, I think just as PCOS can affect a natural cycle, then it can affect a PCOS cycle in an IVF cycle in exactly the same way.
Cool.
Yeah.
And another one from Gabby. Cysts on ovaries, when are they a worry? Because both of us, she's had a, when she was scanned, they saw a cyst on her ovary and they didn't seem worried about it. So at what point does it become worrying?
I think when you've got multiple cysts, that's more of a concern. Yeah. Or if you've got if that one cyst is very large, it might look a bit odd. But just generally one cyst, you know, most women will have cysts on their ovaries at some point. And sometimes you even feel you get that little twingy pain and you think, oh, actually that was quite uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And that could just be a rupture of the cyst, and that's quite normal. So one cyst, if she had that examined on scan and they weren't concerned about it, I agree, it's nothing to worry about. It probably wasn't big enough to cause any concern.
Cool. Well, Kate, I think that's it, unless there's something I've missed, but I don't think there is. Thank you so much for coming on. It's been such a pleasure.
Right, so now it's time for
Old Wives' Tales, Fact or Fiction.
Yay! Woo! So, what have you been talking about?
Well, this week I've been speaking to Professor Tim about sperm.
Ooh.
My favourite topic.
Yeah.
I love the spermy little guys.
So proteiny.
So I was talking to Professor Tim specifically about sperm morphology.
Okay. And what is that?
Well, that is, so when you have a sperm analysis, there are generally three areas that you get results back on. Mm-hmm. So there's sperm count, which is the one I guess that you hear about most, to be honest. When you're not going through this process, you'll know what a sperm count is.
Yeah.
Then there's motility, which is how well they're moving.
Okay, how wiggly they are.
How wiggly and fast they are.
Yeah.
How fast they are up through the cervix.
Oh, lovely.
As Professor Tim would say.
Lovely.
And the other one is morphology, which is how they are shaped.
Okay.
So morphology is one that we've specifically had a problem with.
Yeah.
My husband had 1% morphology in his first test and 3% in his second test. So although it's not bad now, it's still not great.
Yeah.
But they say, when I read all of the forums that I could find after the first diagnosis.
They're so reliable, those things.
Oh, I read them all.
Yeah.
There's not one that I didn't read.
Okay.
And they kind of generally say there's nothing you can do about morphology.
Oh, that sucks.
And I just thought that can't be true.
Okay.
So let's speak to Professor Tim about it.
Okay, and here he is.
So sperm morphology is an interesting one. There actually aren't any studies that show it's worthwhile laboratories even measuring sperm morphology. Even with the World Health Organization, or WHO, normal ranges, men can have up to 96% of their sperm an abnormal shape, and that's still considered a normal result. So the vast majority of a man's sperm can look an abnormal shape, and that's a normal result, which means it has no effect on fertility at all. So very often what will happen is guys will come in with their sperm test result with a high abnormal rate of 96-97%, and we'll be thinking, well, that's why my partner's not getting pregnant, whereas in fact it's generally not a very useful result at all. If 100% of the sperm look abnormal, and there are certain types of shape of sperm which do mean something, that can be very important, but that's actually very, very unusual. So the bottom line is that in general, sperm morphology on a routine sperm test is not a predictor of the natural chance of conception. And importantly, there's probably not a lot that people can do to change it anyway. Lifestyle changes, if the man is overweight or obese, it's important that he try and normalize his weight, because that can improve sperm quality in terms of count and motility as well. If he's a smoker or drinking alcohol excessively, then again, cutting down on those things probably will help. But in general, there's not a lot of lifestyle changes that a man can make that will definitely result in a change in sperm quality on a test.
Great, that's really clear. Thank you so much. We'll speak to you soon.
That's it for this week.
That's a wrap, guys.
That's a wrap. Join us next week. Yeah.
In the meantime, guys, stay safe. Happy shagging.
Have a great week.
Yeah.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.